Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another exciting issue of Hey Kids Comics. This is 26. I am, as always, I believe, I don't know.
You could well be.
I could well be Andrew Farmer, feeling much better than the last couple issues. I got my voice back, and it looks like, and not on so much cold medicine that I make actual sense.
So, no more issues this issue.
That's right, and that, of course, is the melodious voice of one Jedi, Cole Houston, my forever co-host and dream lover, like a
that's right.
Frankie Valli song.
I didn't realize the Faustian contract I was signing when I came on board with this show.
You just got all Woody Allen for a second. What was it? I didn't realize. Well, so what is the what are we doing here? This is a new something with a new something.
We're going to hop on board a new story arc. By golly, it's been a while. And this outing, this trip, we're gonna take you on an interesting journey. It's kind of like the beginning of Quincy, you know, where he's talking to all the recruits about the most, you know, forensic medicine being the most fascinating sphere of police work.
Yes.
This is, I think, one of the most fascinating spheres of comics that's often, you don't really think about this as a genre right. or a type, and that's licensing.
And there's a ton of it.
Yeah, it's crazy how much there has been. You often think of licensing the other direction, like TV shows or cartoons like Superhero Squad or
the movies,
the movies
or any
of course,
yeah.
But you don't really think about the fact that the comic companies themselves have had, you know, kind of like a little sidebar bread and butter.
Yeah, almost like exactly.
The cinnamon roll of comics.
And again, there are a bunch of them that you probably don't even realize have been licensed out and licensed in, as it were. So I hope we can do some exploration of that in all aspects of media. But tonight,
this is our new arc. It came from the license.
It came from the license. And tonight's, I have a vast encyclopedic knowledge of comic books. I've traveled the earth.
And it's important to point out that's encyclopedic, not cyclopean, where you just have like this one-eyed knowledge.
Oh no, cyclopean in such a way as H.P. Lovecraft would have used the terminology, vast. And undersea and waiting to awaken from a dream and enslave the world. You know,
sort
normal.
Of the Dunwich comic expert.
That's right. I want to go to the Dunwich comic convention.
Was H.P. Lovecraft's the Dunwich nerd, I believe.
The Dunwich nerd. Matter of fact, most of H.P. Lovecraft's characters were nerds. They were unseemly heroes. Stick around for the It Came From the License book issue where we do go over some H.P. Lovecraft comics.
Yes, that's true.
There you go. See, it all ties in. But this issue is outside of my sphere. I am not in the wheelhouse. I am not even in the house, not just the wheelhouse. I am so far outside of where they lower the bridge that it's not.
You're not even on the boat. You're back at the dock. You're miles inland.
I am landlocked.
I think.
So this one is, of course, it's the licensing, but it's the Star Wars licensing.
That's,
and
this
I have
is going
to
be the single most hard targeted where we discuss a single license, where the others will be a lot broader.
And so, you know when they, you know in every mafia movie where they have to call in the professional, the guys, the old hats are sitting around the table, and they're like, well, we need to call in Sammy the Tooth or Billy the Index Finger or whatever
that's
it is.
Right.
They have to call that guy in to handle the situation, the cleaner, the Winston Wolf, if you will. Well, since I'm going to be really no help besides the usual, you know, wiener butt jokes that I make.
Which could come in handy. They always do.
It's like a Swiss Army knife of comedy. we've decided we need a cleaner tonight. So, Cole, would you please introduce us to our cleaner for the evening?
I will indeed. In fact, we're going to be kind of like radio show here. I'm dialing him in now.
Oh, you're bringing him in.
Yeah.
Oh, good morning, LA.
No, I'm just going to tell you, you know, chill out. I'm going to call the wolf. Who should
call
be
the wolf
shortly, but not really the wolf. We don't have a.
Now he does have a mafia name, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh really?
Because you know we called him the first time I ever talked to him on a podcast. I think it was the first time he was on a podcast with us, at least you know modern age podcast. Didn't we call him Quiet Steve?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
I think we could call him Quiet Steve. So while we're bringing Quiet Steve in, a little off the topic of conversation, I took a, you know, Cole told me to go see a particular movie, and this was a while ago. This was months ago. And I had, you know, I had meant to see it for a while. And then today I finally got in there and went and saw it. And that was Argo.
Oh, and, excellent.
Oh, it was amazing. Lacey and I really, really enjoyed it. It was really, really amusing, fun, enjoyable to listen to and watch. So, and it was funnier than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, you know, but then again, there was actually good, more humor than you'd expect in the context of such a gripping drama.
Drama, yeah. But we were discussing that when you put Arkin and Goodman together doing anything, you're going to laugh. Where's our ringer?
Well, here's where we run into a little technological snag because I'm trying to figure out how to dial this thing in here. There we go. Now we're going to try again the dialing in again. Oh, here we go.
That we like to hear.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello. This is Andy and Cole at KLDR.
You're the 50th caller. You will.
I want KBBL to give me something stupid.
We'll give you an episode of Hey Kids Comics that you get to save from the red.
You can't get any stupider than what you're about to get.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Steve to the broadcast tonight. Hey, Steve. Hey,
hello, everyone.
Formerly Quiet Steve, but I think the last time we had him on a show, you pepped it up a lot. So we
were discussing that you're kind of like the Winston Wolfe of this episode.
Okay.
Because I know nothing about comic books, so we had to call in the professional cleaner, and that would be – so you better live up to that, Quiet Steve.
I'm not Quiet Steve.
Not Quiet.
I'm just Unbearded Steve.
Unbearded? What happened? Hold on.
No, I've never had one. So, just okay. The other one had a beard.
He did, and he shaved it. So you're both unbearded, Steve.
Oh. Ah. That was Mirror Universe, Steve.
Right, it was Mirror Steve.
So, as our listeners know, and Steve has been forewarned, this episode on licensing, we're going to kick off licensing with probably one of the bigger licenses out there, the most sustained, and one that Steve and I had a personal relationship with this license pretty much through its early career.
And yeah, I think you were on board from the very first part of it.
Yeah, I actually was. I first discovered the Star Wars comic license the very year I discovered Star Wars, I think, or very shortly after. It must have been after, because I seem to think I picked up the first issues of Star Wars at in one of those direct market bagged things.
Oh.
Back before there was anybody knew what that was.
And I got mine as a super treasury.
Oh, that's right.
The one that collected the first three issues in an oversized treasury edition. And then my next one, I got both of the treasuries, the first half and the second half of the movie, basically, adaptation.
And that was about the tail end of when you could find treasury editions of anything?
Right. Yeah, mid to late 70s.
And I think that may have been partially driven by the collector industry, because then you had to have a whole different kind of bag, and plus nobody wants to feel like they're tiny.
Right. I always felt like a hobbit reading a comic
That's
book.
That's right. Bilbo Baggins, put down my comic. But yeah, it was interesting because Star Wars did the first six issues, which was an adaptation of the movie. Came out in every conceivable format.
Yeah, it came out in trade paperback, where they shrank it, so yes. You felt like a giant reading it.
You could, like, pretend it was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or something. Depending on which edition you had, you know? Yeah, they had
you can do Alice in Wonderland. Okay, drink this,
that's
and now
right.
Pick up the comics.
And now you can read Tiny Star Wars.
You could really screw with somebody.
That's right.
You could put them in a cell, bring them one issue of the digest size, then another issue of the treasury size. Just really mess with their heads.
And I remember very distinctly because they really, I think, felt like they had to sex up a movie adaptation.
Yeah.
Because the first six issues, in many cases, had really outrageous covers.
Well, they had the comic book covers of the time.
That's a good point. They weren't,
you know, they had word bubbles on them, and they had you know, the action poses and well, swing that saber, Luke, you know.
Yes, like in the second issue with the cantina cover.
Yes.
Where Luke is just, or Ben rather, is just like flailing wildly about, and Luke's blasting away, and it's just utter chaos.
Well, I did a little looking back, and in the fifth issue, which shows the Death Star blasting Yavin 4.
Yes, it was actually shooting a wall.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're going to blow up the planet, but first they're going to ruin your
wall. But first
wall.
We need to take down that wall.
Well, the problem is every planet has one load-bearing wall, and the Death Star, while it has a wide open...
That. Okay.
While it has a wide open, what does it have there? The chute that you could just fire a rocket right down.
Yeah, it has a small thermal exhaust port.
Right below the main port.
Right. They have an awful security failure in that exhaust port. They also have great load bearing stud finders in the thing. So if they can find that, it's all over, pal.
So yeah, that's really the linchpin, is just figuring out what. Where that wall is and just knocking that out. That's why they had to build it in the first place. The planet was about to fall apart.
And so
I think the most infamous for me, because it has a personal story behind it, was issue number 4.
Okay.
Which featured, at last, a battle with Darth Vader to the death.
Oh, you love this one.
There's a giant Darth Vader reaching out to grab Luke, Leia, and Ben. Luke is firing a blaster at Vader's hand, pronouncing, "Here I stand, though I may die." And it looks like Ben's about to kill Luke anyway. While yelling, "No, Luke!" He's swinging his saber at Luke, not at Vader. So you're kind of wondering what's going on there. And I was at a friend's house who, you know, his parents were a lot more proper than my own, and certainly than myself at that age. And I accidentally let the phrase, "What a BS," without reducing it to its component initials. "What a BS cover." And his mom overheard. That was not a good day.
That didn't end well for you.
That was not.
Can I critique? Okay, so being an outsider in this world, but having, you know, like I said, a H.P. Lovecraftian knowledge of comic books, just a few critiques, a few notes on the cover of issue 4, if you will. First of all, they really need to give Thundar the Barbarian back to Hanna-Barbera and out of the corner up there, because Luke has never had such luscious locks as he does up near that corner. Secondly, really nice, you know, kicky red slippers on Leia in the cover of this issue. Thirdly, Ben needs to work on his color scheme, because that is not the robe that I remember him in from the movie.
Actually, those aren't slippers. Those were her little booty sock, because Luke came and got her out of the – she wasn't even dressed yet in the cell when he came and got her. She's like, "Can I at least get my shoes?" She got those thigh-high boots going on normally. You know, she
right.
A little something to protect the soles of her feet.
Well, you know, you never know if it's in the trash compactor room of any given
And, you know, and as Starship. I say in The Birdcage, one does want a hint of color.
Somebody should have told Ben that a little bit was enough.
But also, you know, you talk about, you know, kind of like really sexing up the characters. There was in issue 3 in the back was the Star Wars pinup special.
Which
consisted of a single pinup. It's Han and Chewie, Luke and Leia. Han, Chewie, and Luke are all standing. Leia is like sitting on the floor in repose.
Yeah.
In this sort of semi-cross-legged position and clearly not wearing a brassiere.
Obviously.
And you're like, "Oh my God, what's going on here?" And then you notice, artist Howard Chaykin. No wonder.
There you go.
That was just
practice. But at least most
American
of the others
flag.
Were on model.
Huh?
At least the others were kind of on model.
Yeah, that's true. I think he was practicing for what would become American flag later on.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
There's a, you know, but it, if you look at the original poster, I guess, Leia's always laying around or
that's true.
Half on the ground. And
yeah, she just sort of like throw herself at the hero's feet in a very sort of Frank Frazetta, Boris Vallejo, or the guy that does the detail work on the vans back in the 70s.
There aren't enough wizards on these covers. Can somebody can somebody draw me up some cheetahs and some wizards and put them on the cover of these books?
And some lightning bolts.
You know, I'm looking at the I went in and tried to do some research, and you know, I would never know enough to be able to throw around anything. But the covers of these books, the early book, right? The only ones I ever had, I think I had the first four issues, and then on through, they're really big fans of the word die. The word die on right on the cover. Like, okay, we need to bring these guys in. We need really something to really pop. Let's just threaten to kill everybody in the most beloved movie of all time in every single issue. That'll get people to buy these comics.
And it's believable because we know there's a sequel coming.
Right.
It's true at this point. And then where do you go from here?
Well, the first issues after they'd finished with the movie adaptation, we get Roy Thomas's
can we say stellar?
Magnificent Seven.
Yes.
Riff.
Yeah.
It's like, take that, Akira Kurosawa.
Well, isn't that pretty much all Star Wars says anyway?
No, that's true. I guess it really is sort of in keeping.
I thought so.
But, I mean, really. Yeah, I guess you could say Seven Samurai. At the time, I didn't know. I thought Seven.
I don't think most Americans knew at the time.
No.
There were like 18 guys in UCLA who knew.
There were no internets at that point.
But the amazing thing is you lose Luke and Leia for the next six issues, I guess. And you're just focusing on Han and Chewbacca.
And
the giant green rabbit.
Yes! Yeah. Yes! The best thing.
Now, I want to point out, you're talking about, you know, we didn't know Akira Kurosawa. At the time, I didn't even know about The Magnificent Seven, because I was not a big Western person. Going back and rereading these as an adult, something else that I discovered that I never would have made this connection. The bad guy in this story arc was none other than Sergi, S-E-R-J-I, dash X. Sergi X.
Not Sergio? Not Sergio, but Sergi X.
Sergi X Arignatus. Also known as the Arrogant One. Now, okay, you're thinking, apart from the arrogance, because I've met Sergio Aragonés, and I believe Steve has as well. Or was that Perez? I know we met Perez, but I don't know if you met Sergio.
I don't think I met Sergio.
Be a friendlier person, could not be a more approachable person in the world. So I guess they had to make him. But if you look at the Sergi X character and you think back, you're like, I think that is supposed to be Sergio Aragonés.
Yeah.
And probably to protect his identity, they made him the Arrogant One. So like, oh, well, maybe, you know, people who knew, like, that can't be him. He's too nice.
You mean Roy Thomas actually did a pastiche of someone? That's amazing.
No.
I can't imagine that happening. I know.
He didn't watercolor anything ever, did he? I mean, and what I love about issue 8. Now, did you say they started again about issue? What was
arc started in number 7?
Okay, so issue 8, you've got Han and Chewie on the front, and it's that McQuarrie Chewbacca too. It's not even like movie Chewbacca in these things.
Like
it's just like
man.
Well, we don't get movie Chewbacca until after The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, you really don't.
He is McQuarrie Chewbacca. Well, because you know mostly it's Carmen Infantino doing a lot of the
Infantino took over, he became
big Chewbacca.
Yeah, he's essentially Spacefoot. That's what he is. And but the issue you get the you
he's
get
a
the,
space Bigfoot.
He's a space Bigfoot. You get the 8. You know the 8. The Magnificent 8 on the front of the thing, and you got something that looks like what was the name? Comic book guy. Marvel. B-list villain. Wore a cape. Mandrill. You get the Mandrill guy on the far left of the book. And but my favorite thing about it is the extra in this issue, the deadly mission of Luke Skywalker. Really, is it any more deadly than these eight weirdos on the cover of this book?
Well, the like, other thing got, that's interesting here is, you know, you go through and you get everything from Space Bigfoot to, like, Man Wookiee by Night.
Yeah, you do.
Somewhere between an ape and a werewolf or...
So how important was Zsa Zsa Gabor to the Magnificent Eight? Because I see her back there.
That was actually Marlena Dietrich.
I see her just... Oh, okay. Okay. No, it's faster. Okay.
This is, I think, very Roy Thomas, but her name is Amazia.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
But it gets worse. Amazia of the Black Hole Gang.
No.
Now that, if I'm not mistaken, I about that same time period, I saw that as a porn title in the back issue of a Hustler.
Right. If that isn't the most sexually loaded name I've ever heard. All right, so tell me about the Green Rabbit. Just tell me. I don't know enough. And somebody...
Well, his name is Jackson. J-A-X-X-O-N.
Okay.
And he ain't no road.
That's right. I was about to prompt you, but I felt I probably didn't need to.
What role did he play? What did he do? What was his thing? What was his shtick?
Comic relief.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Funny animal.
I think he was meant to sort of be like a counterpoint to Chewbacca. You know, you had like some other tall alien.
Okay.
At least he could speak the language.
The amazing thing was the one that got me, and we understood this at the time, was the old Jedi Knight.
Oh, yes, indeed.
The one with the pink lightsaber?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I'm on the same page now.
It is, his name is Don Juan Quixote.
No, it's not.
I wish we could say otherwise, but yes.
Oh, my God.
And when Don Juan first appears, he's dressed more or less like...
I don't know if it's Don Juan, but his last name is...
It's D-O-N-W-A-N, like Obi-Wan.
Yes, like Don Obi-Wan, Juan. Only Don Juan.
Okay.
Don Dash Juan. And when Don Juan the first shows up, help me, Don Juan Quixote. Sadly, you're my only hope. He is dressed more or less like Ben. He's got his lightsaber sort of dangerously tucked into his pants.
They always did that. Doesn't that just seem like a horrible idea?
Also, I want to point out that the entire process, Han puts out an open casting call for, you know, heroes, scoundrels, ex-samurai, cultural
right.
references, or rejects from Marvel to help, you know, to be his aid against the world. He's conducting all of his interviews shirtless.
Oh.
Because he wants
for the
to
ladies.
Prove he is cooler than Captain Kirk.
He just bothers. I got so much going on. I can't be bothered to, in any way, shape, or form, wear a shirt.
That's right.
Then again, if you can stand, okay. So let's look at this logically, right? Let's if you can stand the pressure of being in a room being interviewed by Harrison Ford with no shirt on, you can really take the rigors.
I think that was his tack there.
Right. I think it's probably a wise decision on his part.
I have no idea how Amazia controlled herself.
I know, it's just...
We're functioning under the assumption that she did.
Well, she was previously standing on the stairwell with a giant green rabbit, so that probably put her off to everything for the rest of her life. is there like something you can turn to other than lesbianism when you see the giant green rabbit and you think, okay, I don't even want to, like, you know, she's out there like having sex with space slugs or something then, because there's no reason to continue.
So, is this all before Empire?
Oh, much, yes. This
oh,
was
way
immediately
before.
Following Star Wars.
This was, yeah, this was immediately following, so it was probably in 78.
Okay. No, but I mean, in, chronologically, in the terms of the movies.
Yeah.
And they were fitting it in as if it were between Empire and Star Wars. They had no idea what the sequel was going to bring.
But, you know, Andrew, you bring up an interesting point, because this... The publication started shortly after Star Wars, probably actually even a little bit before, around the same time as Star Wars came out. So 77, The movie's over. Marvel's going to make some money off what they spent on this license.
Right.
So they've got probably some scrutiny from Lucasfilm, but they've got carte blanche to do a lot of different stuff. And I think early on they had a lot less scrutiny. So they've got 3 years. They've got 24 issues practically to kill before they even know what's next.
Yeah.
Right.
Does anything that they do make it into Empire?
Oh, dear God, like, no.
Nothing that they did.
And that's the thing with licensed, especially licensed items that come between movies. You're basically treading water. You've got to have the, and I think they did a pretty good job, actually, of treading water. Because
absolutely.
They made, it was the very essence of the appearance of change. They had some really exciting stories in which the heroes get, you know, in deadly peril, but they knew that they would have to hit the reset button before Empire Strikes Back hit again.
Everybody had to live, essentially. Yes. Do whatever you want, as long as everybody lives in the end.
And I think it's also important to point out that the olive oil syndrome set in that despite the fact that by the end of what became known as A New Hope, which is Star Wars, despite the fact that by the end, at least everyone had had a chance to get a change of clothes.
Yeah.
Very rarely...
Very
rarely in this series does anyone lose their trademark togs.
In fact, Luke, in his farm boy outfit, whenever he was not in his X-Wing fighter outfit,
yes, that's right.
He was wearing his farm boy outfit, whether they were on the wheel
in
a space station. Or if going back to Tatooine, in fact, he didn't change out of that outfit until right before Empire Strikes Back. And we were real excited because he put on his outfit
he put on his yellow
medal ceremony.
He found his yellow jacket finally.
Yeah, he got his yellow jacket.
And
I do have
a correction actually to make, because you're asking if anything actually made it into the movie, and technically nothing made it in. But there were some things that were informed by The Empire Strikes Back, or at least one thing.
Okay.
Because Star Wars ran for, how many issues before Empire? At least about 24.
I think it got to about, 38 is the first issue of The Empire adaptation.
Okay.
Or 39.
Yes, it ran 38 issues.
Okay.
Before, and when I said 24 earlier, I skipped a year.
Well, six of those issues, though, were the...
No, that's true.
That's
a good
adaptation,
point.
So...
So they had, you know, a good 30-some-odd issues, and I believe, yes, it was at the end
and
of...
one annual.
37. You actually have the bounty hunter on Ord Mantell.
Okay.
Yes, but they had to sandwich that in. Do you remember why? Because they resolved the Jabba the Hutt problem.
Oh, that's right. They had to get Jabba pissed off.
How do you solve a problem Jabba?
Well, an interesting thing is...
There was an issue, I believe it was 28, where Jabba is after Han and Chewbacca.
He's literally taken this into his own hands now after Greedo's demise.
Right, and it's not the Jabba that we come to know in Return of the Jedi, because basically it was the guy. Yeah, the little yak face looking guy.
Actually, what they did, an interesting thing is, in the comics, they do that scene with Jabba and Han, that interaction.
Yeah.
But they utilize a creature that you see outside the cantina, who actually looks sort of like a yak or a walrus or something. Looks more like a walrus than the one they called Walrus Man.
Yes.
And so they had established that this
that
is
was
what
the
Jabba
character
like.
throughout the beginning of the comics.
Okay.
Until they actually introduced Jabba in Return of the Jedi, that was the Jabba that they used. Although you didn't see him again until Return of the Jedi. But Han and Chewbacca save him from
stone mites.
What were they? Spice or space ants or moon
stone mites?
Moon mites?
Stone mites.
Stone mites that could eat through the hull of a starship. And they actually saved Jabba and his, and some of his henchmen. And so he releases them from there. He says all debts are paid, and they actually resolve it. So
they shake hands and everything's cool. And then I think that
they did something at the very end of 37. They're like, oh, by the way, the death mark is still on Solo, so we've got to write something in very quickly that Jabba hasn't forgiven him.
Which goes to show you can't trust Jabba the Hutt when he says you're off the hook.
No, of course not.
And yeah, that was a neat thing because I remember, you know, later making that connection. It's like, wait a minute, that's that bounty hunter from that last issue who points out.
And they had at that point, they had the adaptation. They were already working on the adaptation.
Exactly. So yeah, they knew where things were
headed. Go ahead, guys.
Truthfully, Archie Goodwin was the writer right up through the, I think he took over around 13 or 14 and was the writer right on through the Empire Strikes Back adaptation. And he brought in some interesting elements. As a kid, I loved, and the Carmen Infantino, who unfortunately, I thought he did very dynamic, but none of the ships looked right. None of the droids didn't look right.
The droids looked sharply angular.
Yeah.
Like you could cut yourself just by looking at them.
But I really love looking at it now. I was a little put off by it then because I was like, this didn't look right. None of this looks right. But it's a really an interesting design choice now. Of course, then when you got to The Empire Strikes Back, Al Williamson took over as the artist, and it was like you were looking at a photograph.
Oh, absolutely.
In many cases. But there was a couple of characters that they came up with in Archie Goodwin came up with, and one Cole and I just loved to make fun of, and it was Valence the Bounty Hunter.
Oh, yes.
And he was a stormtrooper who had been blown up and lost the entire right side of his body.
What? Yeah, he was like half human, half robot, straight down the middle,
and
in
it
the
was
classic style.
Exactly right down the middle.
He was sort of like an android Two-Face.
I wish he was Two-Face.
And then, of course, he had the Floronic Man Flexi Flesh.
Yeah,
so he could appear normal to all of his friends and family.
Sure,
but he hated droids.
Oh yes, he
hated them, and he hated anybody who treated droids as if they were human.
Yeah, he thinks it's people.
They think they're people.
But also,
oh my god, that's amazing.
He had a great tendency. I don't know if maybe the Flexi Flesh just got bad after a while or started to stink, but every few issues he would tear all of the flesh off of the robot side to remind you that he looked like a Terminator poster. And it was just it like every now and again, oh, by the way, rip. Like, yeah, we know, boss. Yeah,
we get it. We get it. Okay.
We put that on this morning. We were there. You're not fooling anybody. He was not the most annoying character of that period.
Oh, no.
The most annoying was Baron Tagg, who was blinded by a lightsaber.
Oh, Baron Tagg.
And had Geordi LaForge glasses so he could see.
No. That's awesome.
Years before Geordi LaForge, of course. And like any good comic book person with an ailment, he did take the glasses off periodically so you could see his stark white eyes.
Yeah.
As a reminder. And like you just kind of wanted him and Valance to meet. He'd take his glasses off. Valance would tear his face off. They could like commiserate together.
Look at me. No, look at me.
And the interesting thing is that, you know, that Baron Tagg name, I didn't realize that was actually a canon name. And in the retcons or whatever of the Star Wars film universe, one of the officers, in the boardroom on the Death Star is a Tagg.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't even know if that was a retcon, because I think that's actually in the adaptation.
Oh, that, you may
be
right there.
The novelization.
I think that may actually also be on the call sheets, you know, the script and everything.
Okay. Yeah.
So we've got the adaptations for the movies. Is there anything else that happens, you know, in between that's worthy of note?
Well, there's an interesting thing where I think they actually find Vader. Like, you know, you see at the end of the Star Wars, Vader's TIE fighter goes spinning off. But if you pay attention, he actually gets it leveled back off. He'd seen flight with Denzel Washington, knew how to get it back.
Good God, he's been drinking.
That's right. But in the Marvel comics, to bring Vader back into the picture, once they got their own original stories going, they had to show him where he had crash-landed on a planet somewhere.
Okay.
And that always just bugged me. It's like, okay, you know, he's fine. He just drove off somewhere to find some more Imperials.
Right. He just went to base B instead of base A.
Exactly.
And even if he did crash-land on a planet, he just punches a little button and goes, hey, come get me.
Phones home.
I'm Vader.
But yeah, if it took a long time for Luke and Leia to show up, but Darth didn't show up until, I guess, Vader, since now we know that Darth is a title, not his first name. But Vader didn't show up until 24 issues in. It was like issue 23 or so before you even saw him.
Well, they had to do five easy pieces and adapt that and adapt Cool Hand Luke and
well then the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Of course,
the
big sleep. Steve.
Well, they actually did a sort of a riff on Gladiator.
Oh yeah,
not a Gladiator film. It was like, Gladiator movies. Luke. They stopped at this intergalactic casino.
Yeah, essentially what they did was they combined the sensibilities even of Casino with the deadly action of Gladiator.
Nice.
Yeah.
Before either of those had come out. So
yeah.
That's amazing.
See, you can see where those got their idea for those movies.
Is that the issue that I saw that has Han and Chewie just floating in space?
That is the one.
Yes.
They're squaring off
that is
cup shields.
Yes, yes. Because it's hilarious because they're floating in space with no headgear or anything. They're just out there.
Actually, that's a little deceptive because on the wheel, apparently Han had overextended his credit rating.
Well, of course.
And he had the option to fight in the gladiatorial games to forgive his debt. And they put you in a zero-G holodeck with stars going on.
Yeah.
And you basically, everybody, it's a free-for-all melee where everybody's just sort of shooting at each other. And they all have like a little saucer-sized laser shield.
Yeah. So a Tron type thing?
Yeah, it's like this tiny little thing. So if you're quick enough, i.e. faster than the speed of light, then you can probably deflect the blasts of your opponents. And so,
but you're in zero G.
In zero G.
So you're moving around all willy-nilly.
And there's dead guys everywhere.
Right.
At least after the
initial. It's like the Hunger Games in space.
That's right.
With no real weapons.
Without it's the benefit of deadly wands.
Now, you have this little gun. A little laser gun.
Yeah, everybody got like a laser pop gun and a saucer.
And a saucer shield. But one of the guys, I guess, had... What didn't one of the guys have like his tusks or something?
Yeah, he had venomous...
With poison?
Yeah, it was a venomous species who was a ringer for the owners. And then there were other story arcs that the wheel kind of was part of a larger thing with one of the most, actually more annoying than Baron Tagg was what, like Red Jack? Was that his name? The red beard?
No. That's the name of Jack the Ripper from Star Trek. It was Crimson.
Crimson Jack.
Jack. Very close to Red Jack, yeah, but it was Crimson Jack. The space pirate.
Arr. Crimson
and
Jack
Jolly
had
his,
somehow
his sidekick Jolly, his sidekick.
Oh, that's right, Jolly. Yes,
Jolly,
and everybody would dress
J-O-L-L-I.
Like Planet Caribbean. It was like Lando Caribbean was. Crimson Jack, as he was known, had apparently acquired an entire Star Destroyer.
Yes.
From which his ragtag fleet of fighter ships could go out and hijack other ships. And there was this whole sort of weird, you know, Jolly trying to find her way to heterosexuality.
Indeed. With her crush on Han and Luke and Leia.
She wanted nothing to do with the men until Leia is their captive and telling about what a great kisser Han is. And then there's that kind of, you know, Batman the movie self-sacrifice going on where she finally, you know, turns to good at the last possible second. And meanwhile, Luke...
Ehrenberg syndrome?
Yeah, Luke on an equally annoying story arc winds up with 3PO and R2 on a water world.
And it's as bad as Waterworld.
Yes, it is. And you've got, like, the corpulent captain of the bad guys who is wearing one of those he's like got an old Sergeant Rock helmet with a net on it.
Yes.
and epaulettes. And it's just the costume designs in these books were often just laughable.
Let me ask two questions because keep in mind, I'm going to say it. We're getting a little long in the tooth already and we haven't even broken Empire
we do
yet.
Most exciting things, though, were, in my opinion, those issues between Star Wars and Empire.
Okay.
I thought that was the most creative, and of course, I'm looking at it through the eyes of a 10-year-old, 11-year-old,
right.
So
right.
I really love those issues.
Question number one.
I could do without the giant rabbit, but other than that.
Other than that, it's on. Question number one, knowing Cole the way I know Cole, is any of the expanded universe going to be discussed tonight? Or is that just off the table?
Well, you know, I think that's technically this was the expanded universe before it had a name.
Right.
Jackson and Valance, and in a way, it's kind of a difficult dichotomy for me personally because in fact,
in the next one of the arcs, Empire actually introduces a character that gets used.
Sorry?
Yeah, there was a character, the Mara Jade character.
Can we talk a little about Prince Chizor? Can we talk a little bit about Shadows of the Empire?
If we must.
But there's a character actually that what was her name called? Shira Bree?
Oh, yeah.
Shira Bree?
I think you're right. Yeah, that character did manage to go beyond the Marvel.
The one that where Luke killed her because he divorced to see that she was a bad guy.
That wasn't Demonia Tag, was it?
And then she shows up later as like the new Vader.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they did kind of breathe new life into that character, didn't they?
Well, that character actually shows up in the novels of the New Jedi Order novels.
Interesting. Yeah,
she corrupts Han and Leia's son to become a dark Jedi. So it's kind of interesting. As Cole said, this is the first expanded universe because they actually have used some of those characters in the novelizations.
Right on.
Or the novels later.
And I have to point out, I'd forgotten about this, but there is a brief story, I think right before Jedi, that was very much a John Carter ripoff.
Yeah.
Oops. Rather appropriately, my lightsaber display decides to spontaneously go off. Yeah, there was a story arc where Lando, Luke, Leia are all running around I think Lando and Luke show up to rescue Leia from the Barsoom Jr. And then came, we'll kind of wrap up.
Were these the ones written by Claremont?
That's an interesting question.
They should never let Claremont.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I think they were the ones written by Claremont.
They were indeed, with Scar. Scar.
The son of the Hulk.
But you know, in all fairness, between
right.
Empire and Jedi especially, and even and after Jedi, the yoke on the neck of writers and artists got heavier and heavier because Lucasfilm began to exert more control. And I seem to remember, like, after Jedi...
Well, and they weren't busy making movies.
Yeah,
they weren't busy making movies, so they had to have all kinds of editorial control.
And it got to be maddening. I mean, there was, I think in desperation, one of the editors finally published a kind of an explanation, almost coming shy of saying, if you're wondering why this sucks,
yeah,
you can blame it on Lucasfilm.
We didn't do it.
Because there was a mandate at one point, I think it was after Jedi, but it may have been between Empire and Jedi. Actually, I think it was between Empire and Jedi. The list, the litany of mandates, no mention of the Jedi Knights, none of this, no that, no mention of Han,
I know I've seen a thing about right after Jedi, they said, okay, Han and Leia are back to pre-Jedi, they're not an item together. They're not an item. And you're like, what? You know, he just been a movie talking about how much they love each other.
Right.
Maybe he was saying, I loved you. She was saying, I loved you. I know.
Right. There was the point somewhere at some time before I got Dark Citied that I loved you.
Well, you know, she probably conked her head or something. But then there was, you wound up with a lot of weird stuff because it didn't know what it wanted to be.
And I actually stopped buying it around, especially with the Cynthia Martin issues.
Yeah, that's where
the art got really very simplistic and the stories really did not know where they were going.
Yes, and you introduced species and characters and concepts that were so non-Star Wars. I mean, not that, you know, Jackson was all that Star Wars, mind you, but it just got downright, it got to the point where, I mean, I collected it straight through to the end. I had all 125 issues, plus the three annuals, but I stopped reading. I was buying the thing out of loyalty.
Right.
Because you had things like...
Well, the character design started looking like it was on the droids.
Yes.
It should be in the droids comic book.
Yeah, I do remember that.
It became very much like the animated Star Wars, you know?
It really did. What? You had like these bug creature characters wearing striped pirate shirts and berets.
Right.
And you had the oversexed kind of vermilion colored people.
Right. With the guys and the girls that were.
And it's like, you know, I don't recall any guy ever complaining about oversexed succubus women of Planet Nine. But you know, you gotta imagine it was getting a little annoying for Leia to have the guys around there all the time looking like some kind of characters from GQ, the cartoon, and then it just, yeah, it kind of collapsed in on itself toward the end, and they had this stupid little bunny rabbit with the single antenna thing going on, and whatever those things were supposed to be, and
the adaptation had some great high points. In fact, I thought one of the other high points was when Walt Simonson and David Michelinie were doing some of the nice, interesting arcs. That was where the Shira Bree character came in. Is also where they had the Tarkin. Do you remember the Tarkin?
Oh, yeah, the big
ship. It was a Star Destroyer with the Death Star ray mounted on it.
Jeez.
they actually were... one of the plots for Return of the Jedi before we got to Return of the Jedi.
Right.
Well, in fact, that reminds me of an issue of the series well before Empire, that the title on the cover was The Empire Strikes. And I remember being kind of taken aback that once the new movie had a title, it was like The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And for some reason, 3PO and R2 are surrounded by stormtroopers, and that's the Empire's idea of striking. But you know, you talk about the EU. By the time the Marvels went away for years, it would be many years later.
Yeah, it ended, I guess, probably 20 issues after, so maybe 2 years after Jedi was over.
Yeah, so then you have kind of a dry period in comics. And then Dark Horse Comics, to really make a name for themselves, they had a lot of really cool indie-owned stuff and very cerebral kind of stuff. And somewhere along the line, somebody said, let's spend some of this cash on buying licenses. And Dark Horse will figure very heavily into this arc.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the licenses that they bought that they maintain to this day is Star Wars.
Yep. Oh,
yeah.
And they have done more with Star Wars in the last 15 years than Lucasfilm did.
In fact, I think Lucasfilm started letting go of the reins a little bit and allowing these things to be licensed, because that's also around the time we got the Timothy Zahn trilogy.
Yes, and then the flood of books that followed.
Heir to the Empire, and at the same time, this Dark Empire came out from Dark Horse.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, that was their first foray. They weren't really interested in doing full-length series at that point. They were still pretty much, if they had a license, they would do a little one-shot, four-issue.
Right, it was just a miniseries.
Yeah.
They did, it was a five-issue miniseries.
And it was some
of the
best.
Luke went to the dark side, and...
Yeah.
They found the Emperor. He had been cloned.
Naturally.
He had a weird... worm? The weird force-reducing worm?
The force worm was actually from Zahn's novel.
Okay.
Yeah, the...
But Dark Horse did
creature in the... Yeah, that... But and Dark Horse did a great adaptation of that.
Which is funny, because it's sort of a license.
Yeah, it's a license on top of another license.
But, you know,
all right, guys, so we are coming up against it pretty hard.
Which is probably good, because we're probably coming up against the point where my personal knowledge, Steve's personal knowledge and experience within the comics is going to become more limited.
Well, and it also becomes more kind of impossible to kind of keep up with it if you're not spending $20, $30 a month on Star Wars comics.
Right.
Because it really does explode as far as the number of offerings that you have.
Well, they started creating all of these different – Dark Horse just – you know, they had their X-Wing Rogue Squadron series, and they had, like, you know, X-Men Babies or X-Men Babies.
Star Wars, and then, of course, X-Wing the Shadows Babies. Of the Empire with Prince Zizhor.
That's right.
Hey, Zizhor, it's knew? Pronounced Zizhor.
Oh, okay.
Prince Zizhor. That's pronounced Zizhor.
Zizhor, who knew?
Who knew? So, guys, do you have any final thoughts on this particular license adaptation? Because, like you said, this is very, very targeted. This is very drilled down. So, in comparison to what we're going to be doing,
I think, you know, as I led in with this, it's has to be by far the most successful license in so far as longevity and sheer volume.
I agree.
I think Star Wars lends itself to the expanded universe and the ability to tell more tales with these characters or even without these characters. And I think that's been proven with, you know, video games and with comics. Like, Dark Horse has been publishing them since 1992 now. So
right.
Full 20 years of them publishing, you know, Star Wars in some shape or fashion.
Almost as long as they weren't publishing.
Exactly.
Publishing it. And you know, we've got a whole new slew of Star Wars licensing that's about to be dropped on us. We just got news today that, I think it was today, that, is it Zack Snyder who's doing it? Somebody just signed on to do the live-action TV show adaptation, something about Star Wars. It's a samurai Star Wars TV show, which, again, not too far from the mark, all things considered, but one of those guys that just decided that he was going to that's what it was going to be. So all this stuff, they just reopened it and are allowing a lot of the licensing stuff to get redone up for TV and new movies.
I must say I'm ashamed I wasn't aware of that one.
Well, I do know I also heard ABC is trying to get something in development.
Yeah, I did. Everybody,
since ABC is owned by Disney and Star Wars is owned by Disney.
I see. Well, you know, back when Lucas still owned Lucasfilm,
Zack Snyder is making a Star Wars samurai movie for Lucasfilm.
Wow.
That's today's news.
Well, the Clone Wars cartoon, the regular ongoing one, the CG one, was announced several years ago. They were, what, third, fourth season now? Fifth season?
Yes.
Something like that. It's my EU thing.
They're pretty deep in it.
Yeah. That was announced that it was going to start on X year, which it did. And 2 years later, the live-action television show was supposed to come out. And then occasionally you'd hear whispers about how, well, you know, that's proving to be a little bit bigger nut to crack. And then they just clammed up about it. It just went away.
Right.
So, and, you know, the thing about it is a Star Wars television show is a tough call, a live action show. That could be kind of tough to do.
It's pretty tough, but then...
Especially if you're going to do it in the manner that everybody is used to seeing Star Wars.
Yeah.
With lightsabers and, you know, jumping.
It is,
Jawas.
But now you've got Disney at your back.
Yeah.
So there's very little that you probably can't accomplish now.
Well, in fact, Disney Imagineers are currently trying to build actual lightsabers.
They already have. Just don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Just don't go. I mean, they keep it next to Thor's hammer and Captain America's shield.
That's right.
In the sub-basement of
But I guess,
Walt
you know,
Disney.
On the comic front, in closing, I want to point out a really fascinating thing that happened several years back. The Marvel comics, every issue, all 125, all three annuals, were in a strange twist of fate, licensed to Dark Horse to reprint in a series of collected editions called Star Wars a long time ago.
Nice.
And here's the way that works. Since Dark Horse has the license, and Lucasfilm actually owns all the characters. They are allowed basically to take that where they may. It's the same thing with the G.I. Joe license that has gone on over to, I guess, IDW at this point. And they've actually published some of those.
That's right. Yeah,
same type
G.I.
of
G.I. Joe classics, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Transformers classics as well. Hey, I guess that's a different licensing issue. I'm previewing.
If it keeps Larry Hama and sad, lonely breakfasts, we're happy.
Poor Larry Hama and his
sad, lonely breakfasts.
Does he have a Hama sandwich for that breakfast?
Nobody could get an answer out of him. He just stared longingly into the distance, the middling distance, and single tear.
And in that moment, in that tearful moment, he came up with a new G.I. Joe character.
He did. It was Ice Cream Soldier. All right, guys. Thank you to Steve for coming on
absolutely.
And my green rabbit bacon tonight. Appreciate that more than he can possibly know. So, guys, you know, the thing about this is a really good opening salvo for what we're going to be doing. Here. Names were dropped today that are going to be brought up a lot during this story arc. IDW, Dark Horse, Disney, Marvel. These guys are going to come up over and over again. I think Star Wars was the perfect place to start with this. Go pick them up. I believe they're available. Now, you guys can correct me on this, but I think I was in a bookstore or another, and I saw them in like the kind of the Masterwork, big, thick folio type books. Is that what you guys...
A long time ago, I think it was published in 6 or 7... volumes?
Yeah, 7. I think it's 7 trade paperback volumes.
Okay.
But they're very big, yeah. And they're like $30 to $40 a piece.
Nice. But, I mean, go, you know, if you can get them. You know, I always say buy. So if you can support a half-price books or you get to a convention and there's some, you know, one of the sellers has them there, wait till Sunday because you're going to get them cheaper, but still buy them.
But they are a lot of fun. It's especially right. If you're not familiar with the material itself and you can kind of like look and think, wow, they must have been really bored back then.
All right.
Or look at it through the eyes of a 10-year-old.
That's right. Just sort of go back in time and imagine that you didn't have a computer, and so, when you finally did,
and you had no idea what the next movie was going to be like.
Yeah.
So
this,
Steve,
was filling our Star Wars void.
Yeah. That's imagine right. That you were lived at a time when you would go see Something Wicked This Way Comes, so you could watch
Three
the Empire Strikes Back trailer twice.
Are you, Steve, are you going to join us for the toy episode of this licensing arc?
I'm free to join you whenever you need me.
Excellent. I
okay,
think you're ideal
I hear
because be... you have a very good, long relationship with at least one of the licenses.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've heard a rumor that you have a secret love for a knight that might come from space. That
the space knight?
I'm the space knight. It's not. All right, guys. So what's next, Cole? What's next week?
I believe, if I'm not entirely mistaken, and I do not have my notes at hand, I believe we are going to delve into the world of feature films.
Okay, great.
Or else
good.
It's television. One of the two. We're going to break it up before we get into toys.
Okay, because I know if it's television, Jason will be joining us. Jason Adams, host of TV VJT and friend of the show, will be joining us for that one. The toy one, we have hornswoggled Steve into coming back for. Guys, thank you so much. This has been a great show. As always, next week, new materials coming. This is going to be so much fun, this story arc. I cannot wait. Signing off, Steve. Say your goodbyes for now.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a fun time had by me and hopefully by all.
I assure you,
excellent.
By all.
Thank you very much. We had a blast.
We did. I had a blast. I didn't know what I was getting into, but I'm glad I got into it. Much like the public swimming pools across this great nation of ours. So as always, buy, collect, and enjoy comic books, especially if they're licensed material from something you love outside of the world of comic books. It's a great stepping stone in. So join us next week, guys. Really appreciate you coming out, Steve, and filling out this show for us. You're awesome.
Thanks, guys.